WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively going to get back out to having crab cakes with people I like on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to let myself play. I got some Raven scratch-offs I'm going to give out. I'm supposed to do Nacho Mamas for Elvis's birthday. I might be doing Nacho's Mamas for like post-Super Bowl in February, but we're going to get back out, get some people together. You know, I still love talking sports with sports people. I don't do it exclusively anymore, and I think it's even more fun when I bring on old foils of mine. Maybe once a year, twice a year, throw some things around, but more than that, when there's actually news being made. And I don't talk a lot of baseball around here because, like, who does? And but at this point, when baseball supersedes football on a weekend, when there's a lot of football being played and, like, Patriots get eliminated, Eagles get eliminated, Cowboys, Steelers, it's a fun weekend. But all on my timeline, people wanted to talk about this fence at Camden Yards. And I'm like, who do I know that knows anything about Camden Yards or like baseball or the Orioles? Because I've been thrown out for like a decade and a half, but this guy is still there. He still cares about baseball, still a part of it, along with Luke Jones and lots of others. Semi-retired, although, you know, they tried to give him a rocking chair, but I see him running around College Park, Ravens games with a mask on. Dave Ginsberg from the Associated Press, formerly, but still kind of from now and again, joins us now. You know, I was just trying to think about, I don't want to argue, Dave, just so you know, like, I don't have an opinion on this that's strong enough. People are asking, what's your take, Nasty Nestor? And I'm like, I don't know. Let me go talk to some people and form an opinion, because I don't really have an opinion on this. I'm more of the, it feels gimmicky to me to some degree. Moeller and I went at, like, what a hallowed ground Camden Yards and how special it is. Well, if it's that special, don't change it first. And then there's the, well, they're going to be able to sign pitchers, and no, they were never going to pay a pitcher. So until you pay a pitcher, you can't sign a pitcher. So those are my first blush things, but I don't know. What do you make of this? Because it's falling onto your lap. You're Mr. Baseball around here.
Well, I would say this. As soon as they put up the Hilton behind the stadium and we couldn't see the Bromo Tower anymore, there went Camden Yards mystique for me. So whatever they do now is fine by me. And you know what? This will be a nice, something interesting to see, because I'm not sure the team will be interesting in 2022. So let's see how this fence plays out. I understand why they did it. Team gave up 258 home runs last year, by far the most in the majors. They had a 584 ERA, worst in the majors. If, you know, if you can't get any pitchers, and the best free agent they've got now is Jordan Lyles, that they signed and may or may not get, you might as well make the fences deeper. And that's one way to improve your pitching staff. So I get why they did it. And hallowed ground, you know, it'll be interesting. Instead of seeing fans and players vie for those balls at the fence, now that it's 13 feet high, it'll be a little more challenging for a player to make a catch, and he won't be competing against fans reaching over the wall. So you know what? I'm for it.
Well, you've known me longer. You remember me back when I had long hair the first time. So you ask about my hair. I'm going to let it out for you here, because this is old school, like Nasty Nestor 1994, right?
There it is.
Right? Okay. So here's the deal. So hair's out now. And Messina used to sleep on my couch. Mark Messina would sleep on my couch. And we would make these arguments about his brother. And this is when his brother's like not even paid yet, right? This is 94, 5, 6. They should move the fence out for pitchers. I mean, pitchers, no pitchers are going to sign here. I wake up 30 years later, they're moving the fences. I don't know if this is an Elias decision, a John Angelos decision, whatever. Certainly the Maryland Stadium Authority, the money to do it. They displaced fans who didn't know their seats were being moved. I've seen that. Like, they half-assed it, which is par. You know, like, the fans find out on the internet their tickets have been taken away. It's weird. But I look at it and I say, all right, great. So what's really going to happen if I care? And not care about the nostalgia or any of that. How's it really going to impact, not the Orioles, but the games being played there? Well, I'm thinking Chris Hoyles would have not been a 29 home run guy. He would have been a 16 home run guy, because 13 of those home runs would have been taken away from him. I'm thinking that's going to happen to Rutschman. That's going to happen to whoever their boppers are. And Luke's like, well, there'll be more triples or more doubles. And I'm like, you'll get a better left fielder. You know what I mean? Like, Brady Anderson always played left field, because back in the day, Johnny Oates would sit in these press conferences and tell you and me, well, you know, Devereaux's arm and Devereaux's acrobatic and he's fast, but Brady's a better outfielder. We always played the better outfielder in left field because it was the bigger field here back in the day. So I'm thinking about historically for old guys like you and me from 30 years ago as to how it would have played out through every era of every Miguel Tejada and every Javi Lopez and every Sammy Sosa and everybody they ever would have signed. And the idea would be if you get a bandbox ballpark, do what the smart general managers did. Pat Gillick didn't have any problem winning. You know, Dan Duquette figured it out. McPhail figured it out. You get pitchers that throw ground balls. You get right-handed batters that hit the hell out of the ball and pull it and hit home runs. And that's you sign Juan Gonzalez and juice him up and let him hit 50. I mean, that's how you win. Now they're going to have to try to do it a different way. To me, it's just a different way. And that's the weird part of it is that it had an advantage built in, maybe not for Mike Mussina if he was going to throw fly balls, but it did for Scott Erickson. It got him paid more.
Well, look, everything you said was true. And back in the day when the Orioles had big boppers, yeah, that short wall fence was great. And, you know, if even Chris Davis, you know, pull hitter to the other side, had several opposite field jacks to the left field side. Now they don't have that type of hitter except for perhaps Trey Mancini, and I will give Santander a bit of a prop on it. But now they don't have those type of hitters. They can't win by bopping the ball there, and their pitching's terrible. So they are doing what will make this team and teams in the Orioles teams in the future more competitive. Right now, they're not competitive at all in the AL East, and they may not be because, as you said earlier, they're not going to get any free agent pitchers here that go, well, heck, it's 26 and a half feet further back and left. I'm signing up. No, they're not going to sign here because they won't get the money they want. And they're playing on a team that's not really going to compete in the AL East for a long time. So I think it's basically, Elias said it's about the future, but I think it's more about the immediate future in making the Orioles a little bit more competitive with the terrible pitching staff that they currently have.
Since we're smooching butts here, I'll say you just said something I completely agree with. They're not going to be competitive for a long time. That's a horrible thing to say in January of 22 after what's already been endured because people are like, oh, Grayson Rodd. I mean, Mahler sits here and it's like he works for the team. It's embarrassing to me. And I tell him that because they're not close. They're not – get the double-digit losses first. Let's start with that, right? And – let's start with getting them on the field. So as much as we're here talking about the fences, and I'm happy to debate it all day long because I like baseball at one point, and I'd rather have these kind of debates than whether they're going to lose 99 or 101, which has been the long view of this. But even you who's around it, who's a bit of an optimist over the course of time when it comes to them, you keep going back. You're not orange speckled glasses. You're not like on the payroll, but you want them to win, and you acknowledge, like, this isn't close. This isn't – but you know why? Because what they do with this fence is they try to take away home runs from Aaron Judge now, right? Like, that's their idea is we move the fence back. We'll screw a couple of these teams for a couple of years of right-handed hitters. And I think it balances that. That's why I'm – anybody that's really pro doing this, I'm scratching my head and saying – tell me 10 years from now how this really helps this ball club win. Because as I tweeted immediately, and this is me being a dick, but it's true, they could have had Jurassic Park, Yellowstone Park. They weren't going to sign pitchers because they didn't want to pay them. This wasn't about – I mean, they didn't lose Mussina because he hated it here or was dying to be a Yankee, and you know that, and I know that. And Mussina has this reputation of being a jerk and all that. We never experienced that. Mussina wanted to be here forever and wear an Oriole hat in Cooperstown. The real reason the team lost because the owner's been awful. It hasn't been because of where the fence is or the American League East or they didn't have money or Washington or any of that. They didn't sign here because the owner didn't want to pay for the players. That's really the truth because they had money at one point and they've had great managers at various points, Mike Hargrove and Buck. I mean, they've had good managers of people from Gillick and Duquette and McPhail. Those guys figured out ways to get them to win without having to move the fence back.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Nestor. If this team ever, and I mean ever, because I am not, I got to be honest with you, I haven't seen evidence that this rebuild will work ever. But if it does, and they turn the corner, then they can always move the fences back. I mean, there's no rule that says they have to have the fence a certain way. A football field's got to be 100 yards, or your park can be whatever they want it to be. So if they end up getting several right-handed hitting boppers, and they have some pitching that won't give up home runs to left, then they can just move them back when they want to, when this team is competitive. But for now, this is the best way they can make something happen and maybe get under 110 losses like last year. I'm still not seeing incrementally how that's going to happen without pitching. They're going to have to pay some guys. This rebuild with youth is a good idea, but you've got to supplement it with some star quality players. And they haven't added those star quality players and probably won't for several years. What they're doing is getting rid of the stars so they can have extra payroll for when it finally happens.
Well, and we've heard that the first time around, right? And then Machado winds up not being here and they give the money to Chris Davis. Dave Ginsberg is our guest, longtime Associated Press, should need no introduction in these here Baltimore parts for the local sports fans. And this fence thing happened and you know, it's not that I don't want to talk about Joe Ortiz or the Ravens picking 14th or what's going to happen to all the old guys. And we can get into all that. We got plenty of time for that. But when baseball hits me on a football weekend and people wanted to talk about this fence thing, it brings me back to, well, that's not bad that maybe they'll talk about the losses. Maybe they'll talk about who's owning the team. Maybe they'll talk about the lease. Maybe they'll talk about what's really going to happen here 5 years or 10 years from now, because I'm still young. I'm not old like you, Mr. Retired. I'm 53. I need them to win again. And I've moved myself out of the sports business exclusively because of the atrophy for all of this. And now on top of this, dude, I'm 30 years into my career, my 31st year on the radio. I remember being a young guy and worried about feeding my 10-year-old kid in the summer of 1983 and 93 and 94 and 95 and that lockout and hold out and walk out, and they start playing in May and they're into that again, right? I mean, and the Orioles are at the root of this because, to your point, they haven't really tried to win. To your point, you don't feel like they're close because, they didn't have any pitching to begin with last year, and then they're recruiting guys that nobody else wants. They really haven't been trying. They are one of the reasons there's a war between the owners and the players right now, which is this tanking thing that so many organizations find comfortable in the aftermath of Astro Ball, and then you find out that they cheated, endemically cheated. And now we're sort of waiting this out in a labor dispute. They almost didn't get to the field 2 years ago in the middle of the lockout. This has been the story of our lives, writing about this, right? I mean, Dave, how many times have you had to deal with Gene Orza and Donald Fear and all these, going back to Marvin Miller and Andy Messersmith and Mark Belanger being around here and player reps and all of that? That's the truth of the sport right now, is that they're not even active. We're talking about the fences and they can't figure out how to get on the field right now.
Yeah, and not even really actively meeting every day. There's no sense of urgency going on. And really, spring training supposed to start in the middle of February. That's obviously not going to happen. And, I just see I can't imagine behind the scenes that they're close. Opening day in late March, probably not. I can't imagine how that would happen unless they really get it together quickly. And, no one needs 6 weeks of spring training to get ready, but they do need some getting ready point. And then if they don't get it done quick enough, then the beginning of the season gets altered. And who knows what happens after that, whether they start in April, May, one of those shortened seasons where who knows, Nestor, but there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency going on there. And that worries me.
See, it doesn't worry me because you're retired and you don't get to live in, Sarasota or Fort Lauderdale for 6 weeks. Dude, did we know how much fun we used to have? You know, going upstairs at Fort Lauderdale and going and getting one of those grilled pretzels and sitting there and hearing the crack of the bat and having Scott Erickson mix who knows what in that milkshake and that little piece of shit room that Angelos made them all with the weights that were all rusted out and stuff. Like, those were the days, man. I soaked all of that in. And you're like on the rocks in the grill now, like hanging out and like, so you don't even need spring training in all this, but can I mean, man to man baseball, cause we don't ever get together and I don't see you out amongst the world. Give me something positive. You're an optimistic guy. Like when it comes to the Orioles and baseball and Camden Yards, and you've driven into the city 50, 60, 70 times a year to watch this atrophy and all that my 30 years on radio that I've witnessed. Do you have any sort of silver lining? Because I can give damnation to John Angelos, Peter Angelos, Lou Angelos, any Angelos, talk about Elias and cheating and make fun of them and talk about their 100 losses and where their players are and talk about how they screwed their business up and all of that. And I can rumor them to Nashville. I can do all of that. But at some point, they need to get up and walk again. And I don't know where that's coming from or where that's happening. And I not guys at work for them. I don't want to talk to anybody working with Masson who's got to say it that way. But like, you've really been around it on the inside. You know how all the sausage is made. Is there any thought in your mind that there can be light, as an optimistic person that you are, that over the next couple of years, somehow, some way, that 28,000 people start showing up again and caring again, and we get a real hot stove and like, I am not optimistic about it because I've met these people and I know how they've treated good people. And as long as they're there, I'm really going to be dubious about all of it. And we don't even know where the owner is. We don't like it. It's such a shell game from my perspective, just witnessing it on the outside. I'm not trying to be calling Peter Angelos and getting them on the show. That was 20 years ago. I'm just wondering what happens to this franchise. And then you think baseball on top of it can't get to the field. Like, I'm really worried about Rob Manfred and like at 100,000 feet, the shift, starting pitching, going away, gambling, 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 bet, 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 bet. Like I'm lost, dude. I mean, I'm really lost and I want to be found. My name's Aparicio, you know?
Well, here's my thing, Nestor. I've been following the Orioles since way back in Memorial Stadium. I endured 14 straight losing seasons. So for me, it's about going to a baseball game. And it was great when they made the playoffs. And, you know, Delmon Young's double will forever be in my mind as, you know, the highlight of a long career of covering the O's. And I, of course, I still do. And it's tough to watch him now, but there still is nothing like going out, watching a baseball game in June, nice weather, beautiful stadium, maybe not a big crowd. I mean, back in the day when they first opened that place, they would get a sellout crowd for Kansas City on a Wednesday repeatedly for years. That's not going to happen anymore. It's not going to happen for a while. They're still, because the price is so expensive, even when they start winning, they're not going to be 30,000 every night, but there may be more. And that's if they start winning. I mean, there's a plan in place, but it's a really slow plan. And you mentioned a couple of years, not even in a couple of years. In a couple of years, you can hope for a 500 team and then take it from there. But this has really been a slow rebuild with absolutely no positive results yet, and really no assurance that it's going to happen yet, because everything they've done, I mean, we'll see how these draft picks come out and we'll see what this international draft meant. It means nothing to me because they paid $1.7 million to a 16-year-old. Who knows where that's going to happen? And yeah, I'm an old man. And
it's something they've never done, though. I mean, it's something that other places do to win, right? It's something they've never done.
Agree. So, I mean, that's what they're, it's possible. This whole thing, Rutschman could be great, and all these pitchers could turn out to be something. All these, they got another high draft pick coming in. I mean, by maybe not tanking, but not putting out a competitive team, they've had the basis for a rebuild. How long?
By the way, Dave, come on. If you're not putting a competitive team out, you're tanking.
Well, I mean, yeah. you're saving payroll. I mean, that's what it is. Unless they have, you know, and baseball should discuss a salary cap. Every other major sport has one. They don't. And that's why the Yankees are going to be almost impossible for the Orioles to catch unless they open, the Orioles open their wallet too. I mean, Tampa, a few teams like Tampa Bay have done it on a lower budget, but, you know, primarily the Dodgers and the Yankees of the world that have the money to spend are going to continue to dominate the sport. And I just would like to see the Orioles be competitive. That's the next step, because they aren't right now. And, you know, a lot of it's just to save the payroll. You get rid of guys that were on the cusp of actually, you know, making even decent money. Their contract's up this year or next year. Goodbye. We'll take another young guy. So, you know, I get the rebuild. I'm not sure if it'll ever produce, but I understand it and I remain optimistic. And until that time, Nestor, I like some of the other, I don't know, 10,000 people that go to a game. And I went as a fan and I went as a reporter last year. I just enjoy seeing a baseball game. And that's what, you know, the Orioles have to hope fans continue to do. It's still fun to go to Camden Yards. It's just not, if you're expecting them to beat the Yankees, well, you shouldn't. You just go out there and have a few beers, a hot dog, and enjoy some beautiful weather in a nice ballpark. That's what I did.
To me, you mentioned Delman Young. That's the idea. That's the experience that they have to be working toward, that magic. And it does feel very far off, and it does feel like an investment that needs to be made on behalf of the customers, on behalf of people to invest in it. But there has to be some belief. And right now, just getting them to the field is difficult enough. Dave Ginsberg is here, longtime Associated Press, semi-retirement, not really, still monitoring all this. I want to do Ravens for 2 minutes with you, but I want to do Terps, because you're one of the guys in the Terps. You cover the Terps, and there are a lot of people that are in all these places. You spent a lot of time around Turgeon before and after games, and like through all that. Every time I was down there, I saw you there. And I don't go a lot anymore because I just don't go a lot anymore. But for what that program is and where they are, this is a real turning point, right? Like, that's the talk about making the money where the donuts are made. It's not the football program in Maryland. It's the men's basketball program. This is an uncomfortable couple of months, because they're going to lose a lot. It's not good wherever it's going to be. And then somebody's going to have to come in here, and the expectations are, and the needs, it's not a expect, it's a, they need to have a dramatic change, right?
They do. And, you know, I wasn't terribly against Turgeon, but I understand why that didn't work. And to me, it was this year. He brought in a bunch of transfers. They had some decent freshmen, and they lose to George Mason, and then and things just go. They barely beat Hofstra, and then it was obvious that it wasn't going to work. And, you know, and then you have Danny Manning, and maybe they beat Florida, and okay, man, he's got a shot. And then now they're just not a good team right now, and that the any hope of Danny Manning being the man has probably vanished. So this is a very important hire coming up for their head coach. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone with Maryland roots. I mean, that Turgeon was never going to be Gary Williams. And the fact that he was Kansas based was another factor in his that didn't work for him. And it just never, the fans never embraced him. He never won big besides one season. And this next hire is going to be critical for this whole program. To go back to where it was. It may never. I mean, Gary Williams just was, you know, the ultimate. But something toward respectability, something the fans can appreciate and look forward to going to a game. I don't know who these guys are, and the ones that I do know aren't that great. So they can't shoot and they can't win. Right now, it's really not fun to be a Terps fan. Really isn't.
Well, they've messed with my circadian sports rhythms here with this plague, where like seasons were weird, attendance is weird, media is extremely weird. It's kind of gone. I mean, and you know, I don't see you so much in the Ravens games and the Zoom, and John doesn't want to deal with the media and like all that. The Ravens now are in a really precarious circumstance, right? 8-3, high expectations. Lamar's going to get all this money. They're the one seed. Then they lose six games in a row, unprecedented, injuries that were unprecedented as well. And they have to pound sand on this six-game losing streak and live with this for the next 7 or 8 months. And still the uncertainty of Ronnie Stanley and guys coming back from injuries. And what are we going to – and the quarterback's done being cheap, right? They're done with that. Now he's a $20 million quarterback, about to become a $40 million quarterback. The football thing never ends here, but this is one of the really strange off seasons for them because they're not drafting high. They never really want to draft high. You never want to be bad enough to draft in the single digits. And they have a bunch of draft picks, but they have a lot of needs, and they're in a heavy transition phase from the Calais Campbells and the Brandon Williams and the Villanuevas and the Sammy Watkins as to, and maybe even Justin Houston and some others, as to what this is going to be next year for them.
Yeah, well, at this point, they can always blame the injuries. They didn't have the guys they needed. So, yeah, that six-game losing streak, and I think they won't, you know, Harbaugh won't come out and say it, but they just didn't have the guys they needed. That was a very shorthanded group. And personally, I don't think that it's Greg Roman's fault. I don't think Martindale's fault. You know, fans are clamoring for them to be fired. But, you know, if you're a run-oriented coach and you don't have all your running backs and your quarterback is missing for the last four games, it's going to be tough for you to implement what you want. So they should stay on course there. But you're right. I mean, they've got the 14th draft pick and several others. They have to fortify the defense, I think, first, and get Lamar healthy. And he's got to improve. I didn't see, even when he was playing, I didn't see improvement. I'm not saying that the other teams figured him out, but I just don't think that he was as good as he certainly was, didn't come close to approaching his 2019 MVP season. And I just found a guy that was trapped in the pocket and couldn't escape. So, I mean, I still think he's a good quarterback, a very good quarterback, one they'll have to pay. But they need to surround him with a pretty good offensive line, and they didn't have that last year. And, you know, let's face it, tough for the Ravens to win with Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey out. That was done. You got Anthony Everett and an old Jimmy Smith back there at corner. That's not a formula for success. So a lot of holes to fill. I'm okay if they move on from Calais, who was great, but, you know, he's going to demand a lot of money, and maybe that's money that can be put elsewhere. Same with Brandon Williams, but you do need some big guys up front to replace him, and that's going to be a need, and a few pass rushers to boot. I could name everything, really. There's no shortage of needs on this team.
Well, for me, and if I would have asked a question at the end of the first post game, you know, after the Pittsburgh game on the Zoom, I would have talked about an incomplete. It felt like for a lot of the guys that made it to the end of the year, the whole grade on the season was incomplete. And that's why I'm not down. I think John did a hell of a job. I think Roman and Martindale, hi, what's your name? You want to be my quarterback? Hi, Josh, go play. You know, like it. Insane stuff happened for them this year, including six losses in a row. But I also look at it and say, piecing this thing back together for next year, you're not going to put that genie back in the bottle. They were good enough this year to still be playing football right now and to have a real chance to win a Super Bowl. All that was kind of taken away from them. And for that, it is the weirdest thing because you want to be critical in some way. My thought would be piecing this thing back together again is going to be harder to do with Lamar's contract becoming onerous. I think we saw that with Joe Flacco. Once they won and Flacco got paid, other parts of the team had to atrophy unless you wind up signing Mark Andrews and getting that sort of a draft pick right out of the gate, third, fourth round pick that plays and plays well. They need to hit that on the draft. They need a couple of these fourth round picks to turn into players.
Yeah, and not to mention number 14 has to be darn important. Got to be good. You can't take a chance on that one. That's got to be a guy that comes right in and plays. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in Eric DaCosta to give the money that Lamar wants and to still work around it cap-wise. But the most important position in any sport is the quarterback, and that's one you got to have. I thought Huntley played well, but for those who say let Lamar walk and let him get – no, that's just not going to work. You need to have a solid quarterback. They're not going to get one in the draft, so pay Lamar his money and then work around it, because that's, I think that's inevitable.
I think it's inevitable as well with Lamar. And I don't, I've been skeptical, I would say, from the beginning. And the reason I was skeptical, and you might have been there, I was out in Canton, Ohio for Ray Lewis's induction, and the Ravens were playing the Bears in that game, and it was the first time Lamar had the ball, and it was all weird without, you know, Joe and the way the offense, well, Joe was still on the team, and he ran into the first linebacker, like, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is weird to look at. And I said to Luke, I've dubbed that the original sin. The original sin is you have a quarterback that runs into linebackers. And the last time I talked to Harbaugh, he was all pissed off at me at the end of the Minnesota game for asking him and Lamar, how dare I mention that your quarterback ran the ball 21 times, and that might be a problem. And 4 days later, they got their ass kicked in Miami. A week later, he didn't play against Chicago in the backup one, and he was never sort of right again after that. And I think to myself, if you have a quarterback that runs in the linebackers, you are on borrowed time. There's a reason other teams don't sign up for that. They don't want that. There's a reason you might not want to pay $40 million a year to that, in that if your quarterback's not standing in December, you have no chance. Whether it's Tyler Huntley or RG3 or Matt Schaub or John Beck or guys we never met during the Flacco era, right? There were whole years of Mark Bulger and nobody knew what he looked like, because if your backup quarterback's playing, I noticed one thing. None of the backup quarterbacks are lead. Patrick Mahomes is playing this week. Josh Allen's playing this week. And if there's less of a chance of your quarterback playing because he's running into linebackers 150 to 200 times a year, I've never thought that maybe in the early going it's a good idea. As it gets older, I'm worried there are going to be more Decembers where Lamar's not, maybe not available, but not 100%. And if Lamar's not 100%, I don't know. That's his game. His game's running the football.
Mister, I offer you Robert Griffin III, who with Washington was a great quarterback. Then he ran into Haloti Ngata, got injured, never was the same again, ever. And a quarterback like that risks injury. And once he's injured and he tries to become a drop back quarterback, that ain't going to work, because Lamar's biggest threat is his threat to run. And if he doesn't have that, then he's got nothing. So to your point, if you run 21 times and you run through the middle of the field, you are risking injury and you're risking your career. And
if you're doing that in November, you might not be around in December. Like that, you know what I mean? No one's ever done it in the history of the game. Quarterbacks running the ball 21 times in November, it's just not a good idea. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it wasn't a good idea then. It won't be a good idea next year or the year after that, because you need him to play in December, not in January, not even in December, in February, as we're getting into this 17 games, all of this. I shake my head and people get pissed at me. And it's not like I don't like Lamar, that it's not exciting, that it's not good. I don't think it's sustainable. And that's the word I use, sustainable.
That's perfect. You know, run toward the outside, slide. You can run, and you can run toward the middle, but you cannot take those hits repeatedly. One of them's going to hurt you, RG3, and then you may never. Granted, Lamar will come back next season, but RG3 came back the following year, and he was never the same. And that's a big risk that you take when you're going to spend a lot of money on your quarterback, and he's a quarterback who likes to run the ball. Harbaugh said, I never think about injury, but you have to think about injury with a quarterback who runs up the middle. And as you say, 21 times a game, crazy stuff, crazy for a quarterback.
Consequences. I've said to everybody, with a plague, you don't like the mask. This is the consequence of 30% of our country not being vaccinated. Consequence. The consequence is you like Lamar. It's sexy. It's great. He runs. He's fast. You're in second and one. He's 21, 22, 23. Now he's 25 and was unavailable the last half of the year because of the original sin, is what I call it. Dave Ginsberg is here. I know he was doing no sinning at all up on that cliff in Jamaica where he is in semi-retirement. Dude, I am living so vicariously through you. You know what I mean? All that bad baseball you watch where they threw me out and did me a favor because I'd have been sitting down there next to you and Heist and all them. Believe me, dude, you deserve it. No one, because when you were watching all that shitty baseball, you know where I was? In the grill, having a good time 15 years ago. So I want you to have fun. I do love seeing the pictures and love the semi-retirement. And I hope we get back to some semblance of normalcy, right? Like covering sports, you got out, I would say, kid, you got out when it was good back in the day. I haven't talked to a football player in 2 years. I haven't been in a room with a football player in 2 years. And that's not how we did our jobs. That's not who we are. And you know, I'm really beginning to wonder if we're ever going to talk to a football player again.
Well, let alone that. How about going into the clubhouse before a game, you know? Or, as you mentioned earlier, and there was nothing better, and believe me, Nestor, nothing better than Fort Lauderdale in the springtime covering demos, covering walking into the clubhouse beforehand. And, you know, as you say, Erickson mixing shakes, I haven't seen a clubhouse in 2 years, and it's not because I'm semi-retired. It's shut down after football games, no more into the
what's the cost
room.
to, because I'm a jerk and I'm going to be a jerk about it and all that. You tell me, you've done this professionally, you've fed your family doing this. We believed it to be important work when I began down at the News American. I've always felt like accountability based on watching Ursay steal the football team from that moment forward, right? Everything about this, I count the beans, I get the money, I get the gambling. I'm in on the gambling, right? I mean, I'm Maryland Lottery, so I get it. But then there's the, what do you owe the community? What's front facing? What's fair game? And what's fair accountability from a $10 million football coach to do his job and be honest with the media? And that's becoming harder and harder. And the accountability part of that, when Kevin Burns down in South Carolina, is a different, we've entered a different era now, and they expect me to lower my bar, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not lower my bar for access, lower my bar for integrity and accountability and answering questions. For accountability, I'm not going to lower my bar for that.
Well, it's a little different now on with Zoom calls, because whoever the questions are actually selected by the host. So, you know, if you're on that Zoom call and they don't invite you to unmute your speaker, then you ain't asking that question. And some of the, you know, it's been difficult because there's no one-on-one sort of, you don't look Harbaugh in the eye and ask the question. You look, you know, you throw a little square here, and it's been different, and it's not good. It's certainly not as productive as it used to be. And accountability is less because he's talking through a little, you know, he's talking on Zoom on a screen as opposed to you looking each other in the eye. And, you know, Jerry Coleman, maybe I shouldn't bring up his name here on this show. I don't know, but asks some questions that he gets shot down. It's a little more difficult now on Zoom. You know, can't ask the questions that are going to sort of tick off the coach. As you well know, Nestor,
I think the world can use a lot less of Jerry Coleman, but a lot more accountability. So that's my opinion on that. Dave Ginsburg is here at the Associated Press. He asked questions. I asked questions. We've been holding the sports team semi-accountable to all of this because that's been our gig. And I think you're excused. Go back to the beach, go back to the pool. And here's the best part. If baseball stays out, they're not screwing you from going to Florida. You don't have to worry about fungos, morning practice, bus rides across the Everglades, none of that. You're in retirement, so I'm going to live vicariously through you. So the more fun you have, the better my Facebook thread looks.
Well, there'll be plenty fun ahead. And one more thing, though. Sarasota, not nearly as fun as Lauderdale. Wasn't that big a fan. Enjoyed covering the team in Lauderdale much more. I could live without going to Sarasota, and then they sort of
why is that? Can you riddle me this? My mother-in-law lives south of there. There's a lot more teams over on that side, Bradenton and whatever. And I find that to be a pretty part of the world, but it's not Miami and Fort Lauderdale. There's more action, but also more traffic, more all of that. Listen, that Fort Lauderdale, that era, I love that era and being a part of that and flying in. And I still love Fort Lauderdale. I choose to go to Fort Lauderdale when I want to lay on the beach. I don't choose to go nothing against my mother-in-law or Sarasota or Tampa or Clearwater or any of that. It's not where I choose to go, but if I live somewhere, I might want to live there. Listen, I've been treated like shit by the Orioles in both places, certainly in Sarasota. By the time they got to Sarasota, I was no longer a media member. So I would drop Luke off at the front door and go back to my hotel and work and then come back in Sarasota. So I've been to Sarasota 3 or 4 times. I'll be honest with you. I sort of liked it in, but Jana Marie made it beautiful. Let's start with that. So sitting there, it's beautiful. And it was a bit of a challenged Hispanic neighborhood. Yoders had great, right? Amish food. I see you nodding, yep. Right? You got some good fried chicken there and some produce. I could see where it's sleepier. I mean, I see that, but I'm not down on Sarasota. I don't think that was the worst thing they did. I think of all the stupid, and it was a cash grab, no doubt about that, because they screwed Vero Beach. They screwed Orlando. They had that Braves deal done. Let Joe Foss tell you that story one day. But they were supposed to be in Orlando with the Braves. That's kind of where that was their destiny until Angelo screwed it up, then Vero Beach. So like all those places, you hated Sarasota, really? Is it that you didn't like the team and it wasn't fun, or like, What about Sarasota did you not like?
Sleepy. It was a sleepy town. It was a beautiful stadium, and they couldn't sustain that old Yankee stadium in Lauderdale. And I get the move, but you covered it all, man. Lauderdale had great beaches. You know, we on that off day, Rockabacco and I, down at South Beach, man. Wet Willies. It was wonderful.
They got rid of the News Cafe in South Beach. Did you hear this?
No,
the News Cafe's gone, dude. No more eggs, no more bacon. Well, they got no more newspapers. You know this is a newspaper. Yeah. I'm a newspaper guy too. But I saw that. I'm like, what's next? They're going to take Wet Willies. They're going to take the whole strip down there. But yeah, those were beautiful days. And I guess that's it. As we get older, they're not coming. You and Schmuck going to the dog track and playing High Line. That's not coming back, man.
No, and you know that's exactly. And Sarasota just. You know, I didn't like the beach as much, and you know, nothing against you guys, Sarasota, but it was in Fort Lauderdale. Aruba Bar on the beach down there, just great stuff. I just love the whole experience of Lauderdale, you know, everything about it. And Sarasota was just, you bring up Bradenton, even worse. I mean, there wasn't much to do there. Yes, there were some good restaurants, and Main Street in Sarasota is okay. But, you know, you're taking away
Siesta
South Beach.
Key, Lido. Come on, man. It's not that bad, you know?
In comparison, if it was one or the, you know, if it's one or the other, I would take Lauderdale 100 times over 100 times in a row.
Do you know how many mornings I was there to greet the guy that cut the grass to get our radio station connected at Fort Lauderdale in 1996, 97, 98, 99, the maroon Stecca era, and making our stuff work, and the lawnmower. The last time I was in a room with John Angelos was 23 years ago. He was on a little cart there, and we were out there freezing our ass off because, you know, it's cold in the morning. It's late February. They're not even playing games yet because we're down there. Eddie Murray. He's out with a cup of coffee, walking back, hitting fungos at 6:45 in the morning. And you wonder if Eddie Murray loves baseball. And I said to John Angelos, you want to come on the show? Just wave me off. It's the only last time I talked, 23 years ago, 21 years ago. I don't know what it was. Man, Fort Lauderdale, though, we had good teams, though, man. You know, Ripken was in that room, you know? Those were good days.
And not to mention the history of that stadium, even though it was a pit, and the press box shook on a windy day. And Mickey Mantle and Yogi Berra, Joe DiMaggio, all played, all frequented that clubhouse.
All the ushers were salty New Yorkers with New York. They were, right? Ticket taker, the old guy that when you park, everybody, hey, from New York, we want the Orioles. My team went over to Tampa, you know. So that all went on too, right?
Yeah, it was a fun time, man. I mean, come on, Nestor, Lauderdale over Sarasota any day. And again, Sarasota I'll take, but when you compare it to that party that was Fort Lauderdale and that crusty stadium that was shrouded in history, you know, man, I loved it.
Could have been worse, dude. You could have been in Plant City or Lakeland picking strawberries.
Oh, my God. Lakeland. Yes, you're right.
No wonder Ray Lewis and Alan Mills left Lakeland.
Yeah. You're right. Man, the Tigers trained there, and it was just like, okay, where am I? What is near? I think Applebee's was the place to be there. Come on, man.
I didn't need anything in Lakeland, Florida, because Sparky Anderson was sitting over there talking baseball with me. And if you ever sat and talked to Sparky, you know you're alive. So, yeah, I know you talked to Sparky, man. Those were the good days. La Russa showing up, Sparky, like all of that, that was – To our point, like talking to players, the humanity and the people. Like we lost Roland Heeman recently, you know. Just the people and the people that had the memories. I think of Sid Thrift fondly in the days of when I think of the old Fort Lauderdale stuff. Dave, I love reminiscing with you. I do love your pick. I'm not a hater, dude. I'm a lover. Like when you're on that cliff there in the rocks, I show my wife. I'm like, Ginsburg's back in Jamaica. What the hell are we doing here? It's 28 degrees. So take care of yourself, man. Stay in semi-retirement. Hopefully we have not a six-game Raven losing streak the next time we get together to talk about it, all right?
Yeah, or someday at Camden Yards. One day, you and I at Camden Yards again. God knows.
You know what I want you to do? Sneak me a hot dog out of the press box. What I want you to do. I'd pay Luke and he wouldn't even do that. It's against his integrity to sneak me a hot dog out of the press box.
Oh, I would do it in a heartbeat, but no more hot dogs, man. Because of COVID, they shut down the cafeteria. Can't get a hot dog.
They took the hot dogs from us?
Nothing. No cafeteria, period.
This is where I would get flippant and say, well, at least you had your press pass. They took mine 16 years ago now. So, hey, and you know what? That was just more nights at the beach for me. It was more nights at Shooters in Fort Lauderdale with Matt Riley is what it is. So
nothing wrong with that, man.
Hey, appreciate you, man. It's always good to visit. Keep happy. And your tan's fading. It's time for you to go back, okay? It's
almost February, my man. Next month, I'll be back.
That's what I'm talking about. No baseball for you. Baseball been better good to Dave Ginsburg of the Associated Press. Semi-retirement. A little baseball, a little football, a little basketball. We did it all around here. I am Nestor. We are WNSD. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.